I did a minor content redesign and then a rewrite of the copy, and I didn't hear anything back. But then 4 weeks later, I get a message from the product owner who was like, "My God, like we've gone through the roof with conversions."
This is Writers in Tech, a podcast where today's top content strategists, UX writers, and content designers share their well-kept industry secrets.
First of all, let me do a short introduction. Today, we're speaking with Amy Johnson, a friend of mine, a community member for the past few years. This is the second time, actually, we're doing it. Amy is the senior UX writer at IKEA. Both of us are doing this interview remotely because of the coronavirus situation. And I'm very excited to have you here. So welcome.
Thank you. Great to do this again.
Always nice to chat, even if it's off the record, right?
Yeah.
And by the way, I read your article, the interview with
the one in UserZoom?
Yes, I also shared it on the newsletter a few
weeks ago. Oh, thank you.
And that was fascinating stuff to learn about what you do at IKEA. And this is basically what I would like to talk today a little bit. First of all, I love the case study that you talked about with the bot, that there were people that were cursing the bot.
Well, that was just a prototype, because we have to have a way, we have to teach the bot how to handle profanity. The bot hasn't actually been released yet. So we're trying to, a lot of what I'm doing with doing now is doing a lot of training phrases and making the bot smarter.
That's nice. So most of your work today is to do conversation design for bots?
Yeah, a lot of it. And also user journey analysis or customer journey mapping, I guess you could say.
Mm-hmm. And mapping, yeah. Usually you, when we're talking about customer journey mapping, so it's like you're looking at the data and breaking specific user journeys and then try to optimize them with better communication, or you just design from scratch new assumptions and new user journeys?
Well, actually what we have, because I work at IKEA, we have a pretty well-established general customer journey mapping, like a mapping of the general IKEA customer from, you know, dreaming of a better home life up until just having an item and trying to improve your usage of it, I guess, at home. So the aftercare. So it's an existing model that we have, the map. And what we're trying to do with the chatbot is map the chatbot interactions to this map. Like at what point during the customer journey would the bot be best proactive or reactive? And also at what point in the journey is it would a bot be prioritized over a live handover to an IKEA coworker, a customer service coworker?
Mm-hmm. And what's the percentage over there for reducing human customer support with that bot?
Well, I think it was the goal. I have to check the figures exactly, but I think it was actually the bot is meant to reduce calls to the customer service center by 25 to 50%.
Wow, that's crazy.
Yeah.
It's a huge organization. I'm sure that 25% is like a huge save of money.
Yeah, I mean, it would just be also, it's not like we're ruling out having human experts on the coworker end answering calls, but just about how we prioritize them, like which issues the bot can handle and which issues that are best prioritized for human to handle.
Right.
Because, I mean, sometimes the customer service center is getting hundreds of calls per day about, when are we open or doing a stock check.
Mm-hmm. And this is something that a bot can answer easily.
Exactly.
Of course, it's always like the combination of still have human in those interactions, but only on very specific use cases.
Yeah. And there's always the option for handover if it's a more complex issue. So that's something we're mapping out as well. Like the complexity of the request. And right now it's kind of all theoretical because it's not live yet. So we're trying to, we have hypotheses and assumptions about the use case, but we'll see when it goes live. And we're rolling it out in different markets, stage by stage.
Right. And then when you will have more actual data, it will be much, you could work your way with that data and optimize it, obviously.
Exactly. For mismatched intents, for example, we work a lot with intent. Right. With user intent, and we'll be able to map it out. And we actually have data, empirical evidence for what people are, which intents are not being matched, so that we can go and correct them.
Oh, I want to ask about benchmarks. So, can you? You probably did some massive research, and I want to know if there is some kinds of you know, best practices or benchmarks for bots today that are exceptionally useful, or something that you can point out that we can share with the audience and they could look at and get some inspiration.
I think that the best source of information I've gotten from my job has been through Hillary Black's group, actually, on Facebook. Mm-hmm. That's an incredible community of just really people who know a lot more than me. For example, I've been at my job for a while now. I've been doing UX writing for a while now. But this is my first chatbot, so I'm a complete noob when it comes to chatbot. So it's been really interesting and really challenging. So I think that Hillary's group is great. Hillary's written a lot on it, and it's just fascinating to interact with the members of that community.
That's amazing. I heard also that she's doing a course right now, which is also cool.
That's right. I think she is. Yeah, I thought she was doing it with you, actually.
No, it's not with me.
Okay. Oh, it's too bad. But,
next time.
Yeah, I mean, it's the thing that's really cool about chatbots is that I feel like we're kind of I'm finally on the ground floor of something really exciting, because it's relatively unexplored, at least, and it's the first time IKEA is really doing it. So benchmarks have been, for example, I've mostly looked at things within Sweden, like bots that I've actually used. And one of them, because I was recently quite sick with a broken rib and pleurisy.
Whoa.
Yeah, I know. So that's why I'm like, COVID doesn't really scare me that much after what I've been through in the past month. But when I was very sick, I used Capio Go, which is an online medical service in Sweden. And the chat was fantastic, because it was just, the nuances were so great, and it had the right amount of like informational chips as well as interaction, that it was so well balanced that I actually felt like I was getting help. And then the follow through was fantastic.
Amazing.
I've tried so many that don't work or just really hollow and make you feel really stupid.
Mm-hmm.
And I like Capio because it didn't make you feel stupid, and it didn't make you, the bot wasn't biased against my not being a doctor. I really enjoyed the need mapping aspect of it, like, and how they kind of left, like, the interactions were varied. They were between both chips for things I didn't know and I didn't have the vocabulary for. Like, I don't know. I'm not a doctor, and I'm also not a native Swedish speaker. So there's a lot of medical terminology I do not know, for example. It was great because I didn't have to figure out the words, because I'd had it there. I understood the words that were there as the chips.
Mm-hmm. So it was all in Swedish?
Yeah, and I do speak Swedish, yes, but my medical Swedish is kind of not, it's not very well developed. And I didn't want to have to be dependent on my Swedish husband to tell me what these medical terminologies meant. Also, he doesn't know them, because even though he is Swedish, he's not a doctor either. So this was great because it was a combination of like, what are your, like taking it to kind of clinical terms, which were there for you in chips, but then also kind of letting you fill in let the user kind of interact on their own terms as well. So it was a good balance. It was the right ratio. Because sometimes it's like if you have a chatbot that does all chips for you and you fall between the chips, like information that's not there, then you can't get help.
Right. And that could be very frustrating for the user.
Exactly. Or if it's all kind of like derived from your interactions and what in your input, sometimes you don't have the knowledge to take it to that level. You don't have the information. If it was all fill in the blanks using your own terminology, you probably would not arrive at the right conclusion either. So I thought that Capio Go was fantastic because it was a combination of both chips and speaking on your own terms.
Amazing.
And then at the end, it also, one thing that was also great is at the end, it connects you to to a follow-up service, so you can also make an in-person appointment and you can get your prescriptions as well. And that's automated. So in Sweden, you can get your prescriptions fulfilled at any pharmacy, regardless of where you live. You're not tied to one pharmacy. When I lived in the States, it was quite different. You had one place that you went to. So if you were traveling, you were kind of out of luck if you had to fulfill a prescription. But so it was just great. And then I got a phone call from the doctor immediately, because it was, if it were elevated concern, which my case it was, because I could not breathe. My lung was near collapse. So the doctor got back to me and I went in to see her immediately. And I went to the emergency room and got an x-ray, and everything was done, all orchestrated from the app.
Wow.
And the chat. So amazing. And that's what I sort of want to model our chat pod on, even though we're dealing with furniture, not life and death situations.
Right. But like, will the bot make it easier for people to make also transactions and to get what they want?
I think so. I mean, I think that one thing we've prioritized from our customer journey mapping is that, for example, if it's a question about when is IKEA open, that's an easy bot question for the bot to resolve. However, if we determine that we're trying to train the bots to recognize that if it's an error in a later stage in the conversion funnel, for example, like if you're in your cart, if there's an error in your cart, like with payment, at that point you're prioritized to get to for a live handover. So you have a coworker able to answer your questions immediately, because you're at a much more, you're further along in your progression for conversion.
Right. You want to help them to make that purchase.
Exactly. So it's a lot about analyzing intents and mapping them within the customer journey, seeing at what point the user is most probably at and how we can best help them. And a lot of times the bot can help if it's a simple thing, is the Billy bookshelf in stock at this store.
Right.
Like, we can tell you that. But if it's like, my credit card won't go through, at that point you say, okay, that's an elevated intent and we should probably get you straight over to a live agent, right?
So mm-hmm. Fantastic. When we're talking, I'm thinking to myself, what other industries right now do you think that we need to create bots for?
Well, I think all industries can benefit from them if they're smart bots. Mm-hmm. I mean, I was so impressed with the way the healthcare bot functioned for me and helped me get the help that I needed. And especially in these dire plague times, it just feels like healthcare is a very important industry.
Amazing. I wish that in the rest of the world, we could have the experience that you had in the bot in Sweden, in many other countries, especially right now with being happening with this coronavirus.
Exactly. It was so nice because also you don't have to interact or possibly infect other people. Like even with me, without a COVID-19 diagnosis, I mean, I had something else, but I had pneumonia, which in most cases is quite fatal to most of the elderly population or people with underlying medical conditions, not unlike COVID. So it was good that to get the help I needed, I didn't have to go in immediately and sit in a waiting room and cough on somebody who might actually die from our interaction, our face-to-face interaction.
Right. Which happened to me, by the way. I came from Thailand a few weeks ago. The corona thing was still, you know, in the beginning of it. Mm-hmm. So I wanted to check myself to see that I'm all good. And nobody knew anything about it. But I went to the app was really bad. And they even didn't update my phone number. And it was messy. And I had to go there physically. And eventually I was there and the person over there, she was like busy for like 40 minutes with absolutely nothing. And I got back home. I was actually sick when I came back home, like that night, because someone was coughing on me or something like that. So
yeah,
it's pretty crazy that we want to take care of ourselves. And instead of it, because of bad service or flawed service, we actually hurting ourselves. And that kind of digital experiences could actually make our life so much better
and save lives as well. I mean, it's just also, especially with the way it was, like the one when my business was conducted, the fact that you get, without having to meet someone face to face, you were able to get the medication you needed and book an appointment without having to interact with someone who is possibly more immunovulnerable than me. And that was fantastic. And also I have three kids. Like it's not always ideal to be able to go out of the house and have to sit in a waiting room. Sometimes you just can't.
And today people need to stay at their home. So you just can't, literally you just can't.
And there's so many ways. If you train a smart bot, it can help in numerous ways if you make it smart. And I guess that's the caveat. You have to make the bot intelligent. You have to train the bot. You have to educate your bot. And that's what I'm learning how to do. Mm-hmm. That's really interesting.
Do you use, let's talk about the technicalities of it. So do you use like the Google infrastructure for your bot, or you're building it from scratch?
And then it's supported by Dialogflow and Chatbase.
So Dialogflow, I think it's the Google infrastructure.
Yeah, and so is Chatbase, actually. Mm-hmm. Those are two of the aspects of it. I believe our back end is from something is like made by us internally, by a team internally. Mm-hmm. But we are using it for Dialogflow and Chatbase to analyze the data. Yeah, well, when we start getting it. So
right, because I played a little bit with Dialogflow, and it's like you can because it have all of the data of Google, so it already understand different intents already.
Yeah, it seems like it uses machine learning. Because we put in our intents and then it analyzes them and is able to derive multiple intents from
exactly
the 10 we put in.
That's the fun part. You can say, do you have X shelves in your stock? Or you can ask it in like 10 different ways. And because of the Dialogflow, it will understand the intent, which is it's extremely useful. And I think that's the reason that we couldn't build bots 4 years ago, because we didn't have that ability that the Dialogflow opened to the world, which is cool.
Yeah, it's fascinating. Just, I mean, sometimes some of the flows are so complex, and trying to make your bot smart enough to recognize, for example, when you have a triple barrel intent, trying to discern what the user actually wants and what the actual user actually needs, that's a challenge. So it's about how you communicate. Like if you were in a store, you have to sometimes imagine, for example, that you are an IKEA store coworker, and someone's asking a question, and they're asking what seems like a very lengthy question. You're not really sure. You have to think about your behavior and how you would talk to a customer if they're asking basically six things in one question, or if they're saying something but really mean something else.
I know that you've been working also on a content style guide, and I know that you love to promote this idea, which I also love to promote this idea because I think everyone should. So I would love to know more about your process of setting it up for IKEA.
Well, that is, I'm also on the ground floor of that. We've had style guides. We've had, it's actually, this project is falling into the design system, the new design system. We had recently had a digital revamp and transformation at IKEA, and we're working with an external, we've partnered with an external agency called Work & Co. And they're experts in what they do, and they are fantastic at writing style guides. So I'm working with the writing director of Work & Co. Mm-hmm. And with their expertise, and it's so much fun. So that's so been a challenge.
What have you been up to?
Well, we're still very early on in the project. And so right now, what Anna, and she is the writing director at Work & Co., she is doing more of an audit and of the IKEA landscape as it is now, kind of a current state mapping of what kind of copy exists, what lives on our digital channels, and analysis. She's also doing a bit of landscape benchmarking, like different digital enterprises that have really cool style guides, and also, like, of course, MailChimp. And of course, also doing people who have really an exemplary tone of voice in their digital language. And while she's doing that, because right now we're kind of going in two different directions, and we're going to merge soon. So I'm doing more of an internal mapping. I'm doing stakeholder interviews within IKEA, finding out how people write, what their ways of working and writing processes are. So just today, before I got on the phone with you, I was actually talking to our translation partners at IKEA. And yesterday I talked to, or on Friday I interviewed the SEO team. And tomorrow I'm talking to market support, and then people who do the email messaging strategy.
Got it.
So, I'm also talking to my colleagues in UX design to see how we work together and how we can improve that way of working and how a style guide would enable that.
That's amazing.
It's a lot of work. I had no idea how much work it was.
I can't believe that you're doing it by yourself. It's crazy.
Well, I'm not. I'm doing it with, fortunately, I'm doing it with Anna from Working Co, who knows a lot of stuff. And plus, the thing that's pretty awesome about it is that we're working with a whole team from Working Co and from IKEA. So Carolina, who is our product owner and kind of our UX lead on this, she is an expert in design systems. So it's been a pleasure to work with her, and Carola, who is from Working Co, is the project manager. Both of them have extensive experience in design systems. So it's been an incredible learning experience so far, just watching how they work and bringing in what I can from my expertise, from my land of expertise, and seeing how we all mesh.
Amazing. So the first step is just to map the whole current situation on your end. It's interviewing people that are currently creating content for IKEA, if it's mapping the way that you're doing SEO or email or even the UX designers to see how they collaborate. That's on your side.
Yeah.
And on their side, the Working Co, the agency. So they are doing like some kind of a competitor analysis, I would say, or like benchmarking of the market, understand how different voice and tone work. I recommend also on Monzo voice and tone. I don't know if you...
I have to write that down, actually.
Send it to you. It's,
please do.
It's amazing. I want to interview the writer soon, and it's for their online bank. It's fantastic. I can send it to you if you want.
Oh, that's so cool. Yes. So it's a huge process. And then there's also, simultaneously, there's also parts of the new design system will encompass. This is the first time that the design systems really encompassed writing, like that we're really taking writing to task. Because before it had been more of like visual design and interaction elements. And IKEA has an existing tone of voice document, which is gold standard. However, it's very high level and it's not granular. We want to have just very simple things, kind of like the way MailChimp does, like do this, don't do that.
Mm-hmm.
I also think Uber is fantastic in their style guide. It's very simple, but it's also quite granular. You get a very good understanding of what to say and what not to say. Mm-hmm. And because IKEA is so big and because our methods of, I can't speak today. You can tell I've been like sitting at home, like writing.
Everybody's are losing their words these days. It's all good.
Yeah, I'm really inarticulate. I'm sorry for that. We've been seeing how, because IKEA is such a big, sprawling global brand, and because a lot of IKEA's key identity for years has been print. For example, the iconic IKEA catalog,
right,
or our advertisements, the print advertisements,
or the instructions for the
totally, yeah, exactly, or even just on television, for example, even that is 30 years old, perhaps. So there are a lot of There are a lot of media that IKEA has already established itself in. But the digital landscape is so far, it's kind of the Wild West also. There's not a lot that's been audited and analyzed about how we're communicating with our customers or even our coworkers, because we have coworker apps as well for people who work in the store, or people who work in logistics, for example. So it's an enormous sprawling process and it's so exciting.
And what is the next steps with the team of Working Co?
We're having a meeting next week where we're going to talk about all the work we've done. We do it in sort of 2-week kind of activity sprints.
Mm-hmm.
I really like the way Carolina and Carola have set it up, so that we kind of, it's the right amount of push and pull, that we have 2 weeks to do our own thing and then we have a meeting and we kind of consolidate our information, we share our information, and then we have a next step. And Carol has done this very nice roadmap for it. So.
Yes. I was also wondering what is the best push and pull, as you said, way to handle a project. As a project manager, I thought a weekly meeting would be good, but I think once in every 2 weeks might be even a smarter choice.
It works. You can get more ground covered, I think. And I mean, also the thing that's cool about our project managers and about Anna and the people we're working with at Working Co is that they're readily available on Slack. So if you have questions or if you just want to have a touch point where we check in, they're always in the Slackmosphere, so we can always reach each other. There are no flakes on this project. There's very few flakes at IKEA. You know, those people like you send an email to and you never hear back, or you send a Slack message and you never hear back from. I have not encountered that at IKEA. People are they're really good about communicating. So that's been a plus. That's been an excellent part of both chatbot and the design system. Everyone's so into what they're doing and super proactive and reactive and just generally awesome. So
sounds like amazing working environment.
I love the people I work with. I think the products we work with are really cool, but it's like the people and the soul behind things. It blows my mind. I'm so happy.
I read in the interview with you something that I challenged it quite often, which is getting too late into the writing process. You know, people invite you to just, the question was, what is the most challenging part? And you said that when you need to communicate your message by just by the end of the project and not, and you don't have an invite from the very beginning. And I couldn't agree more with you about that. And what I want to ask is what would be the best way to make people give you a seat at the table from the very beginning?
It's really hard to say. I know that it's taken me, it took me 3 years to get to where I am. When I started, I was at IKEA 50% on another project in another department. And I was not part of the design team. It has a lot to do with the organization's design maturity. If they understand the value of, because there are still places, I'm sure even within IKEA, some of the markets, I'm not sure. It's such a big company, but there are so many organizations out there that really do not understand what UX is. And then beyond that, they think that UX is basically UI. They think it's graphic design for a website. They don't believe in testing anything, and they definitely do not believe in the value of having a writer do it. I mean, I think having the data support conversion via UX writing is really valuable to present and to let people know and to evangelize as well.
Right, to start collect data, to understand that the fact that that this was communicated well, it reduced the churn or it's increased conversion or...
Exactly.
Help us to meet our business goals and our user needs using the right words.
Yeah, exactly. Because I mean, one of the examples I have recently was for ratings and reviews part of IKEA. I can't remember which market it was, but I got a quick assignment. It was just, can you rewrite this text for ratings and reviews? Because nobody's leaving reviews. They're leaving like one star, but then they won't say anything. And that's really frustrating when you can't see why they gave it one star or five stars, you know? So it's those are kind of really ominous when you see one or two stars and you don't know whether to believe them. Like, okay.
So what did you wrote there that will make them actually write the review?
Well, I saw the copy that had been written. I don't know who it was written by, but the existing copy on the site didn't make it easy, didn't explain how to do it or why to do it. And then I just reworded it and reworked it. And then I did a little content design as well, like where you put it. So yeah. I did a minor content redesign and then a rewrite of the copy. And I didn't hear anything back, but then 4 weeks later, I get a message from the product owner who was like, my God, like we've gone through the roof with conversions. Like we've been getting like 0.06% of conversions, people who were actually leaving reviews. And now we've gotten up to like to 10% or
whoa.
I can't remember what it was, but it was
crazy.
It was a crazy number. And it was like nothing else had been redesigned. There was no like
just text on an interface.
There was no like interface re-envisioning or retooling of the visuals. It was purely copy that drove the conversion uptick. So I'm like, that was me. So sometimes it's good to isolate the copy and see what the magic of microcopy can really do for your business case. Because it's easy to lose sight of that when you have so many different factors working.
I really love that story. It's fascinating. And the fact that you can do stuff like that in a company like IKEA and immediately see how it increased conversions, that's fantastic. Because also there is many people out there that studying UX writing or that want to get into the field of UX writing, and they just don't have the, you know, they rewriting things, they do some content design, but to get those numbers is something that is very difficult when it's not a real project or there's not enough data to work with.
Yeah, and like it's the kind of thing that you wouldn't have been able to see piecemeal, or that maybe the product owner wouldn't have really understood to just set it aside as its own sort of project. But I remember he caught me after lunch one day and was like, hey, can we talk for a second? And I saw what he wanted me to do, and I was like, this will take me half an hour. So I was like, no problem. I don't need to be sitting with your design team from the beginning. This is something I know that pure copy rewrites will achieve. I had that confidence. I was like, I know this because I look at the way, like the current state of it. And I was like, yeah, of course. Like it's too hard. Like,
you know how people behave online. You know how people behave online. You know how, like in that specific scenario, what they will do and how to phrase the right words with increasing conversions. I can definitely understand what you're saying. So cool.
Yeah. So I knew it was a simple, quick fix. It was low hanging fruit and it was so easy. And it didn't like take lots of my time either. Like I just did it quick and it got really fast results, and which were solidified by favorable data. And in a data driven organization, like everyone's happy for that. And that really imparts your value as a UX writer to the greater good. I don't know, to everyone else.
So a tip that I'm taking for this advice is just to go for the quick wins when possible. And you can just, you know, look at product pages and just point it out, understand how you can write this stuff better, offer it to your product manager or your client or your boss or whatever you're working with.
Yeah, just simple before and afters. Like I've done that for people. So they kind of like were a little skeptical of what I work with because all they see is visual design. You know, it's easy to take something that exists that I think a copy is shitty and just rewrite it and be like, okay, same product. Look how much better it behaves.
Nice. Wow. This is a fantastic tip.
I mean, I think it also a lot of it has to do with me because one thing I admit is that I am senior and I have more self-confidence. Like I wouldn't do this as a new UX writer completely new to the organization. I don't know if I would have had the balls to do that then, but now I'm like, like I know so well, like what is going to make a difference. Mm-hmm. And I'm so confident and so plucky about it that I just make sure that it happens.
Right. But also you see these days, I must say, you see these days, many organizations that their copy is not great and you can just point it out and say, boy, could I write this stuff much better? And I'm sure in 100% that it would increase the conversions of whatever they're trying to do.
And I would advise your students, Yuval, to like, there's an app, I forgot the name of it. I think it came up in your community on Facebook, but it's like, it's called Write On or something, where you can take any interface and sort of, you can sort of write over it. You can overwrite copy.
Right.
In your own copy. I think that's what it's called. Just, that's a simple little tip and trick. Just do that. You don't have to get their Figma files. You don't have to get their sketch files. Just get Write On or whatever it is.
Mm-hmm. To be honest, you can do it in the Chrome browser if you want to do it. You can just like,
yeah.
For example, Let me show you real quick and then we'll finish. So you can just do inspect on every piece of content.
Oh.
And then you go to the HTML and you're like, hello. One second.
I want to see it in Hebrew.
My name, not in Hebrew, of course. Hello, my name is Yuval. Ta-da! You see?
So it's just for your browser.
It's just for my browser. Also in Rhyton, I'm sure it's not rendered in any other place. I'm going to refresh it, so it's going to come back.
You could do a screen dump just to make your case. But that's exactly. Even easier than Rhyton. You can just do it. Yeah, that's a great trick. I'm going to have to writing this down too.
Boom. So right click, inspect, and then go to the text tags on the HTML. It's not as complicated as it sounds. I'm talking to the audience. That is not as complicated because they didn't saw what I did right now.
Ah, okay.
But it's not as complicated as it sounds, and I will add a small screenshot of how to do it in the show notes.
That's super cool. I learned something today.
Every day you learn something new, you know? Yep. I also learned something today, by the way. Many things. I actually changed my perspective a little bit about bots. And I'm fascinated and I'm keen to learn more of all of the things that you said and recommended. And also about, increase the conversions with small copy change in the feedback section. That was really, first of all, it was really impressive, but also really useful tip, I think. So thank you for that.
And it's cheap. Oh, you're welcome. But it's also cheap. It's nothing. It's no skin off anyone's teeth. Like, you can just do it so quickly. If you have someone who's a non-believer, just do your Chrome thing. Work your Chrome magic. Change the copy on site. Do a screen dump and side by side. You don't even have 1,000 person A/B test. Just do it to the person in charge, the gatekeeper.
Amazing.
Be like, okay, see?
And if people listen to you and implemented your change, make sure to collect the data 1 month or 2 months after so you could actually present the data and in your next project say, hey, I changed the copy in that project and it increased the conversions in 10%. And now I'm going to do it in the next project. So make sure you give me the room and space to do it for you.
Yes. And data is usually, as a writer, data is your best friend.
Mm-hmm. Can you give me more examples about how you use data to improve writing?
I mean, I often look at like bottlenecks, for example. If I have access to a bottleneck to see the data and I see interactions and I see where there's a bottleneck, there was something I just didn't check out, for example, a few months ago. It was just changing the wording of what we were promising because people were so confused because there was no text, I believe. And I said, okay, I don't think I understand this. If I just look at this without any guidance from copy, then I would get stuck here too. So we just added a toast. Mm-hmm. Like, I can't remember, but it was something really small. And then we were able to see, oh yes, the conversions went up and people got past that bottleneck. They got through their pain point and were able to check out. And that was a pretty high priority area, a critical area where you don't want users to be confused and check out and payment.
Of course not, yes. Sometimes it's, I saw many people get it wrong, but you can add more and more text as long as you add to the clarity and it's,
there's different ways you can use text. I mean, there's things like there's pop-ups, there's toasts, there's mouse overs, there's so many ways, like eyebrows, there's so many ways to just add text without like giving it lots of bulk. And that's something that our copywriters don't necessarily, someone who's accustomed to print copywriting perhaps does not understand yet. And that's what I've seen as well. When copywriters try to do UX writing, one of the kind of novice mistakes, mm-hmm. and I say this as a person who's worked as a copywriter for 15 years, first, was like, we didn't realize all the cute little tips and tricks UX writers have up our sleeves. Like all these small ways to make text work for you without increasing bulk.
And when you say increasing bulk, it means like increasing the amount of text on screen?
Yeah, sometimes I see like verbal diarrhea, like text diarrhea. Like I can always tell when a copywriter's had like, okay, this is not for the copywriters. And I will say this to your listeners. I was a copywriter too. And I know the magic you guys can work. But sometimes when someone's untrained in kind of digital dialect, when they write for a mobile screen, you just see verbal diarrhea and you don't know where to look. If you're just skimming and you're at a critical point where you just want to pay for something or check out or get to the next stage and you don't know where to look because there's all body text. And it's kind of an amateur mistake as a UX writer, but now there's so many ways you can just make text mean more in smaller spaces while still being kind and warm and useful.
What ways?
I mean, you can, if you have a character limit and you know that there's always a short way of saying things while still being nice. Mm-hmm. And not being completely stiff and robotic.
Also, I think that that mistake is happening often because it also happened to me as a graphic designer turning to be a UI designer that you just want to give, you're trying, so when you're a designer, so you're trying to just put all kinds of crazy illustrations and make everything beautiful. But when you're building a flow or in a journey, it doesn't need to be like that. You don't need to show all of your skills at once. You just need to make it work. And also when copywriting, sometimes they're coming from, advertising usually what they needed to do until today is to create an ad that deliver the complete message in one place, at one spot, without looking at the whole flow as whole and zooming in into just a specific part of the flow in which you can communicate that message in a much shorter way because they already have some amount of information that you don't need to repeat it because you already said it in the past. Does it make sense?
Yeah, of course. I mean, one of the people, I think it was one of our fellow community members, once posted the main difference between copywriting and UX writing is attention versus retention. A copywriter will grab your attention and say something really cool and really witty because they have a split second to grab a viewer's attention. Whereas as a UX writer, you have that luxury of that they're in a flow. Mm-hmm. So it's more to keep them in the flow, to keep them in their lane, to keep them at their task. How do we retain them? So that's one of the biggest things I tell people when they ask me what's the difference.
Attention versus retention. That's a good one.
I can't claim it's mine. I know it was someone in our community. I think it was Nathan.
We're about to finish. And yep. Before finishing, I just want to ask, do you have any recommendation for a book for our listeners? Something that you read that caught your attention regarding to being a better writer?
Oh my goodness. Conversational Design, Erica Hall.
Nice. Okay, that's a good one.
I really like her stuff.
Yeah, also Just Enough Research was a good one.
Oh yeah, she's great. I also like How to Make Sense of Any Mess. That's such a great book. Abby Covert.
Okay, I'll check it out. Thank you very much. Amy, it was a pleasure as always. I learned a lot.
Thank you. Thanks for giving me time to talk about what's going on now. Yeah, thank you for the opportunity. Because when we talked before, I was very new in my role. And now I've sort of been there long enough that I sort of have made my own way. Mm-hmm. Figure things out a bit more. So I know a bit more about my job and what I'm putting priorities for. I
have a feeling that once you're going to roll that bot, the amount of data that you're going to receive make the whole design experience so much different. And I would love to speak with you again to learn how to optimize your bot and stuff like that. I'm curious about it.
Yeah, I'm really curious. I can't wait till we roll out. I think it's going to be really exciting. I'm a little scared. Take care of yourself. Be healthy.
You too.
Okay, bye.
Bye-bye.